Welcome to another edition of In Focus. My name is Bob Perot. It is Wednesday, so that means it is our weekly check-in with the local health unit, the Leeds Grenville and Lanark District Health Unit. And our medical officer of health is here, Dr. Lena Lee. Dr. Lee, thank you so much for being back.
Always great to be here.
And we're also joined today by Debbie McIntyre, who is a public health nurse and cessation program coordinator with the health unit. Debbie, good to have you here.
Yes, good morning, and thank you very much.
We're going to be talking with you a little bit more in depth in just a couple of minutes here, Debbie. I'm talking about how difficult it can be to quit smoking or vaping. But first, we're going to get our weekly update from Dr. Lee, and we'll start with exactly that, your update on the respiratory virus season.
Yeah, so the season right now, the word that I would maybe use to describe it is reassuring. So we are seeing a fall in the number of ER visits and assessment center visits continuing. So it started, we had less over the holidays, and I wasn't sure if that was because, it being the holidays, people didn't necessarily want to go out, get tested or seek care. But now we've had about 2 weeks worth of data, and I feel much more confident that it's also because we've had fewer episodes of transmission, so fewer people getting ill, which is really, really reassuring. The other thing is that the COVID-19 transmission levels do remain stable and low. And so we are seeing across the province a little bit of an uptick in COVID-19 transmission overall. Some regions more so than others. In the eastern region of Ontario, we're seeing more or less stability. So there are some small indications that COVID-19 transmission is rising again, but it's definitely not dramatic and a little bit variable through the region. So that's also reassuring. The other reassuring thing is that flu has definitely come and gone, at least for now. So sometimes we do have a two-wave season. And so, that's sort of in the back of my mind. But certainly right now, flu has definitely abated. And we're not seeing that level of transmission for that anymore, which is a real relief. So I'm very, very happy with that. We are seeing transmission of other respiratory viruses, though. And so the usual culprits that we've talked about on this show before that cause what's considered the common cold, so RSV, enterorhinovirus, which do cause some GI symptoms as well, and other respiratory viruses are continuing to transmit. But even then, it seems at relatively lower levels than we had before the holidays. So things are looking actually quite stable and reassuring.
It's interesting, too, when you factor in the flu, and we have been talking about mainly those three, RSV, the flu, and COVID together over the course of this respiratory virus season. But it we have to remember that COVID doesn't really have a season, like the flu and like RSV. And we see that in these numbers. COVID is more based on, whether large groups are inside or outside. There's more, I guess, environmental conditions. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And, I'm marveling at Bob, and I'm sure listeners at home, we have so much collective knowledge and experience with this sort of thing now in language that we never had before. And so this is really exciting for me in some ways. It is a hard one piece of experience, I think. So that's important to remember. But as well, you're totally right. COVID-19, what we're seeing, and I think what we've seen in the past as well, especially last year, is so much of COVID-19 transmission has to do not so much with, a season that will come and go, but more so to do with rising and falling transmission patterns that include, like you said, whether people are inside or outside, even other factors such as, are there big social events, big, if there's a big concert in town, if there's a big sports game, et cetera. That can affect things. In schools, for example, was there a meeting where everyone was there? You know, transmission of people in indoor spaces that are all in a group. The other thing is for COVID-19, our rising cases does have to do with global trends as well, right? So as cases rise in other parts of the world, as new variants come, that can affect the timelines of when we have rising or falling cases. And that has less to do with the seasons than other respiratory viruses. Though I'll say, you know, a lot of what we've talked about does have to do with the winter season. And so what we've seen in the past and what I expect to see in the future is that we're more likely to have these waves over the colder months. But we certainly see waves in the summer months as well, right? When there's more events happening. And so I do expect that to be coming and going over time, over the next number of years.
And that's why you say it's so important that we live with COVID-19, you know, and that's the way that we've put it. It's coexisting here so that we can, as we pretty much have, and I would say about 95% of the cases now, resume daily life as it pretty much was before the pandemic hit and forced all the lockdowns. So there are things that we do need to remember, even though we have sort of moved on. There are still things that we have to do if we get sick.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe the way that I would put it is we've moved on to this new way of doing things, right? Which is, I think, you know, a lot of the message that we've always known and heard about before, but maybe wasn't top of mind and maybe didn't feel like it was as necessary as it feels now. And so that has to do with the same messages. So staying home when you're sick, I think that's really critical. Not going to work, not going to school, not going to social events, you know, just being a part of protecting other people from your germs, frankly. So that's one thing that we've always been talking about and which has become so important and so top of mind now. Other things such as hand washing, wearing a mask if you're out and about and you've recently been ill, or even wearing a mask as a measure of self-protection. All of those things are really important. One thing that I did want to speak to as well is ways in which workplaces can help, which is to say that there's been a lot of conversation about you know, not requiring employees to have sick notes in order to let employers know that they're ill, just because it does take a lot of interacting with other people in order to get that sick note most of the time. That's been in the conversation. It was in the conversation before COVID-19, right? And certainly has become more relevant now. Another thing is having paid sick leave so that people don't feel as though they have to work when they're ill, and or even having paid family sick time for parents with small children who would otherwise be going to school because they don't have daycare if their parents aren't able to stay at home. And then of course for workplaces to have backup plans where possible and feasible, just thinking ahead a little bit about that, having cross-training of staff, allowing staff to work from home, all of that I think has been part and parcel of work during the pandemic and during COVID-19. And certainly I think is lessons learned that a lot of workplaces are taking forward in this sort of phase after the emergency phase of the pandemic that we're in now. And certainly something that we've taken forward as an organization as well.
Now, before we bring Debbie into the conversation here, I know that you wanted to talk a little bit about testing. So I'll ask you to do that if you don't mind. I'll say briefly, but you know what I mean. I'm not trying to be disrespectful or anything. We do want to bring Debbie into the conversation here. So yeah, you have a message about testing.
Yeah, just a reminder that the province has changed the availability and eligibility for Paxlovid, which is that medication for treating COVID-19. One thing is that people who are eligible for the medication now includes those who are 18 plus who are not up to date for COVID-19 vaccines, which is a significant change from before. So if you're in that situation and you meet the other criteria, then definitely getting a prescription for Paxlovid and taking that is helpful. The other criteria include having a positive test for COVID-19. Before, it used to be that you could only be considered eligible if you had that PCR test, but now a home rapid test is also considered valid if it's positive for COVID-19. And then the last piece is that there is an expansion to Paxlovid being prescribed by pharmacies. And so not every pharmacy is participating in this. So give your pharmacy a call or check in to see if they are prescribing Paxlovid, but you could get that prescribed to you directly by a pharmacist and not necessarily needing to seek care through your family doc or through the ER or through the assessment center. So those are changes that I wanted to just let people know about as a reinforcement because that change happened right before the holidays. And with the tumult of the holidays, people may or may not have noticed.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate that, and we appreciate these updates that you do every week, Dr. Lee. And it's good because as we listen to this, like we've seen that it has been inching towards things getting better. We don't see the big reverse course that we had seen is certainly even as recent as about 8, 9 months ago, where we would think we're coming out and then go back. It is it's pretty steadily moving forward to where we want to be.
Yeah, so far so good. I'm keeping all my fingers crossed.
There we go. Let's put that on a t-shirt. So far, so good. And then a picture of your face. All right. Debbie McIntyre, Public Health Nurse and Cessation Program Coordinator with the Health Unit. Welcome to the conversation. So happy to have you here.
Yeah, good morning, Bob, and thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And Dr. Lee is sticking around for this conversation as well. I do believe, if I'm not mistaken, this is like National Quit Smoking Week. I'm sure it has a much more catchy title than that. Is that accurate?
That's pretty close, Bob. It's National Non-Smoking Week. Yes.
There we go. And of course, this is of course including vaping now because the two sort of go hand in hand when it comes to the habit with nicotine. Now, we all know that smoking or vaping, they're very, very hard to quit, but we want people to know that the health unit is able to help.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, quitting is very, very hard. I mean, we have to remember that nicotine is addictive. So sometimes it's not quite as easy as just making the decision that you don't want to smoke or vape. So we can offer some help. A couple of different things. Even if you're not ready to quit yet, we can offer some support there. So we can talk to you about helping you to develop some reasons for quitting, helping you think about how you might like to quit, and then helping you to set some goals for that. We've recently updated our website as well, give some good information there about how to get help. Resources are organized in two sections on our website. So if you go into the smoking and vaping section, you will see considering quitting and ready to quit. And we've tried to organize that so that you can find the information that's useful to you at wherever you're at.
And talk a little bit about, if you could, some in-person help that is available, because often when people are trying to do this, they feel like they're all alone.
Absolutely. And thanks to Lena, Dr. Lee, just providing us that a bit of encouraging update about COVID. We are starting to open up to some in-person visits. We certainly can accommodate those, and we can continue to offer in-phone or over phone, sorry, consultation as well. We don't have any firmed up times yet for specifics of when evening support will be available, but you certainly can give us a call and we will endeavor to help if evenings work better for you.
So tell us some of the myths about smoking and vaping, if you could.
Yeah, so one of the biggest myths I always hear, Bob, is that people say, oh, I smoke because it helps me reduce my stress or it helps to relax me. In actual fact, physiologically, nicotine does not relax you. It actually causes increased heart rate. It causes increased breathing rate, increases your blood pressure. And also sometimes that feeling of reducing stress is our brains asking us for some nicotine, because as we talked about, it is quite addicting. So of course, when we give our brains what it's been asking for, we feel like that's helping us to calm down and to relax. Most often though, the relief of stress that we can get also is just from taking a break, going outside and, you know, taking some deep breaths, getting a drink of water, grab a snack. Those kinds of things can be done without a cigarette or vape.
Yeah. And in my case, when, you know, it was, when I was quitting, it was, you know, grab and eat a whole bag of chips, but that's another thing altogether. But, you know, Dr. Lee, you've talked about this many times as we've been dealing with stress and, dealing with, you know, dealing with all of the pressures that are going on with COVID, with work, and all that goes hand in hand with this, that really, if you are looking for ways to reduce your stress, there's help out there to do that too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the really important thing to think about is there are ways to reduce stress that feel good at the time, but affect your health negatively. And so, you know, Debbie was talking about smoking, Bob, you were talking about eating a bag of chips. I've certainly been in that boat. And other ways to reduce stress that are as effective, but are actually beneficial for your health. So Debbie talked about going out and taking in some nature, going for a walk, just taking a break, having some water, all of those things. I think sometimes, you know, just speaking from my own experience and looking at the literature, it doesn't feel like it's going to be as helpful. You know, you imagine what you would prefer, what you think is going to be effective, and those things that uplift you. Sometimes it doesn't feel like even a drink of water is going to be that helpful, but there is literature that shows it is as relieving of stress as some of those other options. And it's a matter of choosing the habits and sort of nudging yourself in ways that benefit your health in multiple facets of your life, which is not to say, you know, part of the challenge of making changes is not feeling too guilty about the choices you made. So I think the term nudge is probably a good one. So making healthier choices in general, and not beating yourself up for misses or things that you know, you may know is not the best thing, but improving a little bit, improving marginally, those are important as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And for people who are dealing with an addiction like nicotine, you know, just like you said, replacing one thing with another, because often they're compulsive people and they need to have something that they're doing. In my case, it was chips, and not probably the best choice. I should have done the nature thing that you were talking about. But Debbie, maybe you can give us some of those tips that we're sort of alluding to here. If someone is thinking of trying to quit vaping, or if someone is thinking of trying vaping instead to help quit smoking, because it's kind of just as bad when you think about it.
Yeah, so a couple of things there for sure, Bob. And yes, I agree 100% with what Dr. Lee said with regards to small changes and rewarding yourself for those small changes. I have people saying, oh, if I quit smoking, I'll have enough money to buy a new car. And I'm like, why wait till you've got enough to buy a new car? You know, take that extra money that you saved from not buying even one pack of cigarettes and get some pizza and enjoy, you know, some time with your family and in a, you know, in a different way. Take a trip somewhere, you know, just even somewhere inexpensive, go to a museum, go check out something with that money that you've saved, and reward yourself for those small changes, because they are difficult. And every step you make is putting you one step closer. One of the things that I'm really glad that you brought up is vaping. We do have people who decide to start vaping as a way to quit. It's not an approved way to quit. However, there have been some people who have been successful. My only caution there is making sure that people are not doing what we call dual using. So if you're going to vape, switch completely to vape and not using any combustible tobacco. Anytime that we do that, we increase the risk of nicotine addiction and nicotine toxicity by using both. So trying not to graze on vaping is the other thing. We talk about grazing, making it intentional so that you're not using, you don't have the vape in your hand all the time. We prefer and recommend that you do not use nicotine daily. Try to limit it to, you know, no more frequently than every 3 or 4 hours.
Okay. And of course, there are other products that you can use to help, like the patches or gum. We've talked about that in the past. Now, we only have a couple of minutes left here, but one important area that you did want to cover, Debbie, was what if you're not ready yet? That's okay, right?
Absolutely, that's all right. And if you made a New Year's resolution to quit, and here we are on whatever we are, January 18th, and you're back to smoking, that's okay too. Any month is a good month to quit. Any day is a good day to quit. So we've got some things we can help you with for thinking about how you want to quit. That's important. Before you make your attempt, there's, you know, cold turkey method. There's nicotine replacement, prescription medications. Any of the prescription medications, you will need to speak to your healthcare provider at this time about those. But if you want to learn more about nicotine replacement therapy, whether that's patches, gum, lozenges, inhalers, we can certainly help with that. The other thing is, as Dr. Lee talked about, those healthier substitutions for smoking, really important. And tell people that you're trying to quit. Better yet, find yourself a quit buddy.
Yeah, that certainly strength in numbers. That's a great thing. Of course, you can find out more by visiting your website, healthunit.org. I know that there's all sorts of great information there. And both of you have provided some great information here today. So, Debbie, I'd like to thank you very much for being with us today on In Focus.
You're very welcome. And thanks for having me.
And Dr. Lee, it's always a pleasure. I look forward to our next conversation next week.
Absolutely. I look forward to it too.
Excellent. Dr. Lena Lee is the Medical Officer of Health with the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit, and Debbie McIntyre is a Public Health Nurse and Cessation Program Coordinator. If you would like to learn more about quitting smoking, then by all means, give them a look at healthunit.org. We've got a link up on our website. I'm Bob Perot. Thanks so much for listening. Have a wonderful afternoon.